Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Megan.
We're two moms with 8 kids between us, from little to grown.
We're in different areas of the country and in different stages of life.
But we both know that motherhood's a lot easier when real moms share tips and encouragement.
And remind you that it's really all going to be okay.
We're not experts. We're parents who've been there.
We're not perfect. We're real. Welcome to the Mom Hour.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 265 of the Mom Hour. I am Sarah Powers here with Megan Francis. Hey, Megan.
Hi, Sarah.
So today we're doing something fun. We are revisiting a series that we started way back in the early days of this podcast called Things We Shouldn't Have Freaked Out About. And we actually have 4 episodes. If you're a longtime listener, you'll recognize these. But we have things we shouldn't have freaked out about as a new mom, as a toddler mom, as a breastfeeding mom, and also about when kids are first starting school. But all of these were in 2015, 16, and 17. And we really haven't revisited it for a while. So I'm excited about this, Megan.
I cannot believe it's been that long. It's like one of those things we did kind of regularly for a bit, and it just feels like we just did it yesterday. So I'm excited to dive in again.
Me too. And, you know, the whole kind of through line of our show is that, you know, usually things kind of work out okay. And all this worrying and fretting and Googling that we do as moms is, you know, often just energy that we're burning up while we realize we can't control the future, right? Like that's So I think probably this concept has worked its way into many other episodes and listener questions, but we haven't really devoted a whole conversation to it in a long time. So today's more of a grab bag, I would say, wouldn't you? Of things we shouldn't have freaked out about, things we did freak out about and now realize turned out okay, et cetera.
Yeah. And I think that what I like about this is it applies really to wherever you are, whatever age or stage you're in right now, you'll recognize some part of something about what we have to say. Or even if you're not quite there yet, it's a fun way to look forward to what you might deal with in the future.
Yeah,
so
agreed.
There's something for everyone in this freak out episode.
I agree. And if you are inclined to freak out, I think you can just know that like having these conversations, at least for me, always helps me to look back and realize like, oh yeah, that thing really did turn out okay. So maybe this current thing will also turn out okay. And that,
right,
at least in my experience, that is a self conversation that doesn't happen once. It happens over and over and over again. Like, oh, right. Remember how like this turned out okay last time? Like it's all going to be okay. So,
right. Yeah.
I was curious, Megan, your kids are 11 to 22. Do you still freak out about things? Like, are there still new things that you freak out about as a mom? And what does that look like?
So it doesn't look the same as it used to. I think when they were little, there was a combination of literally everything being completely new to me. And there were all these big overarching things that felt so fraught in the moment. So like sleep and feeding and discipline, all those things, like they were all I could think about because I was learning as I was going and they all felt really big. And there really isn't a lot of that now. I've already gone through all of it with at least 2 of my kids.
Right. So
nothing is really new to me, but I do sometimes. This is a total stress thing I realize that I do. I'll fixate on relatively small things that become, I think, kind of a symbol for the feeling of losing control. And I am losing control and influence over my kids slowly, but surely that's what parenting is as they get older. And I've written and talked about the fact that it can turn into kind of like, I can't remember how I referred to it fairly recently, but it becomes this like inconsequential nag spiral. I'm going to put it that way now, but I had some other term for it. Where basically the kids are starting to wiggle out of your grasp, which is developmentally normal. And that's what's supposed to happen. And they still kind of need you, but you can't really do anything about most of the big things. So you sort of start to fixate on things like, did my kid remember to renew his license plate tabs or whatever? Like there's just these little things that really, I can't do anything about those things either if they're adult kids. And if they're, you know, my teenage kids, I have more control, but that's still a micro thing. It's still just one little detail. Those are the kinds of things that'll get like lodged in my head and take up way too much space.
It's almost like, well, first of all, that came from that great NBC News Think piece that you had a couple of months ago.
Yes.
And it's on our blog and I'll link to it because it's a really great piece about what it's like parenting adult children. If anybody wants that view ahead. But I was also going to say, it's almost like, you know, not misplaced, but like nurturing energy that lacks a direction. Like you still need to and want to mother your kids, but as they are more independent, it doesn't find its place to land. So you fix
right.
it. Yeah. I think that's interesting.
Yeah. And I think that's one of those tales as old as time, right? Like everyone has a story about their mother or mother-in-law babying, right? Mm-hmm. Or like clucking over things. And I'm trying really hard not to become the older mom of adult kids who is constantly, I don't know, freaking out, calling them and reminding them of things. I don't want to be that person, but I have to like really work sometimes to not be that person.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
I definitely still freak out about things. I mean, my kids are 7, 10, and 12. There's still new things that I'm experiencing on the, you know, with the older two. So there's definitely still firsts. Whereas you said you've literally gotten through up to young adulthood with two of your kids. And not that there's not more after that, but the functional child rearing, you really have pretty much experienced the whole thing. Whereas I have not. And I still freak out. It's usually for me around some kind of like health development, mental health issue that I fixate on or focus on for one of the kids. Really, it ends up being trying to predict or control the future, right? Like that's what most anxious thinking is about. And that's where I come back to conversations like this, where we remind ourselves like, okay, first of all, you can't control the future. So I know that logically. But also that looking back, like, oh yeah, I was so fixated on that thing. And now we're 5 years past it and things turned out okay. Or if they didn't turn out okay, also I was equipped to deal with that. That's the other part of it, is like, we know not everything's going to be okay all the time. That's never been kind of the focus of when we say that. We know that there are really tough things you're going to face in motherhood and really tough blows your kids are going to be dealt. And but that trying to control or predict them or somehow like sidestep some of those hurdles is pretty futile. So when we look back and say, oh, that was, you know, that was hard. Is that what your yoga teacher said? Like that was hard and we're okay. Like,
yeah,
we got through it anyway.
So. We did. And I think sometimes it's about reframing what okay even means.
Sure.
Like, maybe another way to put it, because what is okay? Okay is not everything's rosy and everything turned out wonderfully and it met all my biggest expectations and hopes. It's like, you know, everything is going to be what it's going to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
and you're going to be equipped to deal with it. That's a really good way of putting it.
Yeah. I love that. Okay. So after the break, we have some kind of high level things that we have freaked out about over the years, or maybe even are currently freaking out about. And we'll just kind of talk through how those things turned out. And with the perspective of hindsight, maybe we didn't need to freak out quite as much as we did. We have a new sponsor we're welcoming today, Megan, and it rhymes with books. And that's what they're all about. Picture books, which, as you all know, is one of my favorite things in the world. The company is called Vooks. That's like books with a V. And it's a streaming library of animated storybooks that you can pull up on any device.
So this is really amazing because you've all heard me talk about how when my kids were really little, I used to sometimes skip a page or hide the books I didn't want to read for the 100th time, right? So with Vooks, your kids hear the story narrated at that relaxed read aloud pace. They see the words highlighted, and there's some really lovely animation added to already beloved stories that you and your kids are familiar with, like Giraffes Can't Dance and Where the Wild Things Are.
Well, you all know I've gone on record saying that I really try to say yes anytime a kid asks me to read to them, but staying at home for 3 months has put limits on that, even for me. I'll always love snuggling up with a story, but I can't physically be the reader all the time. Vooks keeps Violet happy while her older siblings are engrossed in their own summer reads, and she can watch some stories right next to me while I work. We even still get to snuggle.
Oh, I love that. Well, Vooks works on any of your devices. You can even put it on the big screen with your Apple TV or Roku and let multiple kids enjoy a story together. There are no ads, no in-app purchases, and guaranteed kid-friendly content. And right now, Vooks is offering 1 free month subscription to all parents worldwide. To get your free 30-day trial subscription, go to Vooks.com. Again, that's Vooks, Vooks.com, to get 30 days of free animated read-aloud stories.
We are welcoming back Breyers Carb Smart as a sponsor today. And let me just say this, Megan. If you have an ice cream truck that goes by twice a week in your neighborhood and you don't always want to shell out $5 for a giant ice cream for your kids, having an alternative in the freezer goes a really long way, and you can ask me how I know.
I have a feeling I know how you know, Sarah. Well, you and I both grew up loving Breyers ice cream, but now for those of us who try to eat low carb most of the time like me, they've got a line of sweet treats called Carb Smart. It comes in both bars and in the tubs, and it tastes fantastic. And with only 3 to 5 grams of carbs and no more than 150 calories per serving.
In our house, the fudge bars were the favorite, and they have just 3 net carbs and only 60 calories each, which means I can say yes to a sweet treat, even if it's only like a little while until dinner. I also really liked the caramel swirl bars, and I save one of those for after the kids are in bed.
Well, go to Breyers.com/themomhour to grab a coupon to try out the Carb Smart line. And next time you're shopping, pick up some bars or a tub. Breyers Carb Smart treats are available at all major retailers, and they're easy to find. Again, go to Breyers.com/themomhour to try Breyers Carb Smart. Okay, so Sarah, before we dive in, I would love to make kind of an overall note or some context here that I think one of the reasons we often freak out, we feel like we only have like one shot to get something right. And unfortunately, this is really perpetuated by a lot of well-meaning parenting advice around this idea that we're training babies to sleep and eat and be independent and self-soothe or whatever it is, like all these great things. But then what we internalize is this idea that if there's some magical window where if we don't get it right, they'll never learn it or they'll never be able to adopt it. Or we just have this narrow window, this one shot. And I just want to say most of the time, anything you're trying to get your kids to do or to learn how to do, it's a long process and you have lots of opportunities to get it right and wrong. Like there's just, it's a long stretch of time that your kids are going to be learning how to sleep, for example, well into their adult years. Like you might have someone who needs to learn all over again how to sleep as an adult. So these things don't just resolve and go away because we, by the time they're 6 months old, get it right. Nor is it too late if they didn't. So I don't know, just, I think that sometimes helps me when I'm starting to feel worried that I missed a chance to do something.
Yeah, I really agree with that. And I think you, like you said, it's well-meaning advice that really is about creating, you know, the best possible start for our kids. And of course, who wouldn't sign up to give the best possible start to their child, whether that's sleep or feeding, nutrition, all of this. However, we know that also mom's mental health and the family unit is of such crucial importance to so many things. So if giving your baby the best start in life in every category to the 1,000,000th degree then also takes away from your enjoyment of motherhood or your mental health, I would argue that we're not ending up ahead. Does that make sense?
Right. Yes.
So, you know, like you mentioned sleep, for example, if letting go of all the sleep advice and breaking all the rules gets you in a place where you feel better, I would say that you can tackle sleep later, for example. So I think that, I don't know, I'm just repeating what you said, but I agree.
Yeah. And that mom's mental health is a very important
part. It's a huge factor.
And the family unit. One thing we've talked about on the show a lot is that the more kids you have, the more you realize that sometimes the good of the unit and the good of each individual are in conflict.
Yes.
And so there has to be some decisions made around that. And so that sometimes means you can't attend to all things perfectly all the time.
Right. It's I think the line that we quote from Me is, I can't care about that right now.
Right.
Like I can't, it is important, but I don't have it right now to care about that. That thing can happen later. So the first thing that both of us have, I think, experienced a little freak out about is kids changing friendships changing, and even things like friendship tension or drama. And you can go first here. I know I have things to say kind of in the preschool and elementary school years, but this is definitely something moms freak out about.
It is. And there are many ways to freak out about this. I think in the preschool years, it's common to try to control everything about the environment. And then as you lose control in the elementary school years, it's almost like then you freak out that you can't, and you may still try to. I have kind of an interesting dynamic in that with my little kids, this was not something that I was super worried about when they were really small. Jacob and Clara have a lot of commonalities I've talked about before on the show. They're both sensitive. They both have, more anxiety than the rest of the kids. And so with Jacob, he was always a sunny, cheerful little kid who made friends really easily. And then he got to about third grade and started having friendship drama. And I remember being like, oh, I always heard this didn't happen with boys, which is a super silly thing to think, or it totally happens with boys. And then lo and behold, the next three boys were pretty, I don't know, they just seemed like they didn't care that much. Yeah. Like they'd make friends or not, whatever. Or like they had a close group of friends and it just wasn't a big deal. And then Clara comes along and now she's like the bookend kid having, mm-hmm. who has had more of that kind of drama again. And I think one thing I learned when it was happening with Jacob that I was able to kind of put into play with Clara, and Will has also had some friendship drama, but it didn't happen for him till high school. So mm-hmm. that was weird and unexpected in some ways. But there's, for me, it was sort of like the mean friend situation. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things I finally realized is that the more I tried to clamp down on it and outwardly discourage the friendship or outwardly protect my kid from it, like kind of like did damage, because mm-hmm. then your child is always going to be defensive about their friend. And what I kind of learned going through this with, you know, Jacob, and then to a much less degree with the other boys, and then finally landing on Clara, is there are lots of ways to kind of vaguely discourage a friendship you aren't thrilled about without actually having to come right out and say something. And the part that now I realize after having done that is I would pose questions to Clara when she was second grade. I remember her bringing home notes and having me read them. And the look on her face was like, she knew, like a note that a friend had passed her, right?
Okay.
She knew that there was something not right about it. That's why she was showing it to me, or mm-hmm. she wouldn't have bothered. But like, she also didn't want me to criticize her friends.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. I would read it and think, this is such mean girl stuff. Oh my goodness, I can't believe this drama is happening in second grade. But what I would say to her is, well, how do you think it makes the kids feel that you're talking about in this note? And she would be defensive, but mm-hmm. I wouldn't criticize her or the other girl. And I'd say, well, how would you feel if you found a note that was written like this about you? Like, how would that feel? So funny now, Clara is just finished fifth grade. And she, about a month ago, said, hey, mom, remember that time, or remember that year you kept making me read notes to you? Which is funny. I didn't make her read them to me. She willingly read them to me. But she's like, you just would always ask me questions like, how would that feel? And blah, blah, blah. And it would be so irritating. And then she's like, well, I don't hang out with that girl anymore. Aww. And I was like, right. I mean, she knew that it was happening, but she also, her loyalties were split.
Yeah.
And there was nothing I could do about that. I couldn't, you know, I remember what it was like to have friends I knew my mom didn't like. And yeah. what I wanted to do was be friends with that girl.
Yeah.
Like, I wanted to defend the person my yeah. mom had a problem with. So I just kind of did it differently this time. And I guess the end story is she moved on.
Yeah.
Whether I did it right or whether it would have been fine for me to take a more direct route, either way, she moved on and she's learned about how to be a better friend, how to make better friends that treat her better. And now with her going into sixth grade, I feel pretty good about where she is, which isn't to say we won't have more issues. We,
right.
you know, middle school, I can't even imagine what that's going to be like with, you know, with her being so sensitive.
Yeah.
But again, I think that, like, I don't know, this is a really long-winded way of saying it worked itself out.
Well,
with my help.
I think what you actually did actively was, by not totally sharing your opinion or stepping in, you were sending the message that she is capable of making good friendship decisions. And that's really hard. Like, that's really yeah. hard to do if your kid is getting their feelings hurt, or if you think your kid is maybe perpetrating some hurt feelings.
Yes.
And of course, like, the blanket statement here is when we're talking about a real deep level of anxiety, pain, bullying at a deeper level, there is of course a place for adult intervention. And I hope you all know that I believe that. However, in a lot of cases, by you kind of just asking those questions, you sent the message to her that she's capable. She knows right. when something, it doesn't feel good, and it's within her power, which is so important, right? Because if yeah. you'd asserted more, she thought, well, this is good because mom's going to help me sort this out. But next time it comes up, she doesn't know that she has that capability, right? So that
right.
I think is awesome.
Right. Like, I could have made a phone call to the teacher or the other girl's mom or something and shut the whole thing down, I guess. But I think you're right. And I think that there's lots of different ways, just to make this side note about the mean girl culture,
yeah.
that it perpetuates a lot of different ways. And when I was a kid, my role was always the sort of regretfully complicit mean girl.
Okay.
Like, I was never the, like, I wasn't the mean girl, but I was friends. I always befriended by really bullies, like mm-hmm. really mean girls. And I would become like fearful to not be complicit. And so I recognize that.
Yeah.
And so it helps. Like, it helps that she is following so close to like the way I was. And
yeah.
I see, but it also sometimes makes me a little too close to it. And it yeah. makes me want to jump in and defend her when actually she's complicit,
yeah.
you know? So
yeah.
it's like, it's a hard line to walk sometimes yeah. when you're a little too much like the way your kid is.
Yeah. I will recommend the book No More Mean Girls by Katie Hurley. I read it like a year or two ago. It's really, really good. I think you could read it. I don't generally like books that specifically are about girls or boys because I have both and some of mine don't follow stereotypes anyway. But this one is geared toward parents of girls. And I think you can read it from preschool age on up. It sounds like it's No More Mean Girls, like it's coming at it from the negative. It's really more about healthy social development and friendship development for girls. And Katie Hurley is like, she's a really accomplished parenting writer. And cool. So I will link that one up. I was just going to add on changing friendships that this is really, especially in the preschool and elementary school years, really developmentally normal for kids to change friendships kind of a lot. And I think it's a common thing for parents to freak out about because you think, oh my gosh, like, they were in such a good group and now the group is changing, or like now my kid wants to be best friends with this other kid that they never used to play with. And we jump to the conclusion that something's terribly wrong. But just from the reading and the experts I've talked to, not only is it normal, it's really actually an essential part of their kind of identity development. So by changing out friendships, they are kind of changing, you know, like trying on different identities for themselves. You might notice your kid wants to like dress or talk or look like whoever their latest BFF is. And that is their kind of trying on these different identities. And not only that, but then practicing the skills of friendship, right? If you having one best friend from kindergarten on up sounds great. And for maybe for some kids, that is really great. But you don't get to practice as many different problem solving and various skills if you're, you know, tight with only one person the whole time. By moving around yeah. groups and different pairings and all of that, they're actually able to practice those skills, including the not so fun skills, right? Like the fighting and the making up and the ending of a friendship. You know, I've had experience with my kids not ending a friendship in a like a horrible dramatic way, but just like a growing apart way. And I think as adults, we really have to be careful not to project our feelings about friendship down onto them, because adult relationships are really pretty different and deeper and more sophisticated than what our kids are experiencing. So while it might feel like just gut-wrenching to lose a friend or to grow apart from a friend or to be betrayed by a friend for us, I don't think it's necessarily exactly the same at the first or second grade level. They might have, you know, their feelings hurt. They might have a bad day or a bad week, but they are meant to rebound from that, find somebody new, try out a new group, and on and on. So,
One thing I think that really speaks to is also the idea that like not all kids are going to experience friendship the same. Mm. I think it's easy to forget that not all kids are going to have like, you know, this thriving big social circle
yeah.
and that some kids are totally fine with that. I remember, Isaac coming home from preschool and I said, hey, you know, who do you hang out with? Who are your friends? He's like, and just nonchalant, oh, I don't have any friends. And I was like, so, you know, my mommy brain is like, what do you mean you don't have any friends? And then I went in the classroom and there were kids constantly talking to him, constantly, but he didn't see those kids as friends. Like yeah. that to him, those were people that occupied space at school with him.
Right.
And then he came home and forgot they existed. And right. that was another way to be normal. Like that was, you know, for a 4-year-old with now by that point, two brothers, like, that wasn't his focus.
Yeah. And his social yeah. needs were being filled and it wasn't.
Right. Yeah. But it would have been very easy for me to just hear him say, I don't have friends, and to go down a spiral of worry mm-hmm. When he's always been the kind of person who has two or three good friends and would really rather hang out with his family. So that can also be normal, yeah. right? Like mm-hmm. there's so many different ways friendship can look for adults and for kids that can all be fine.
Agreed. Yeah. Well, another thing that I see parents freaking out about in general, and I understand why, but is picky eating, feeding, and nutrition, especially in, you know, I'm going to say 0 to 5, 0 to 3, the first few years. And Megan, as we were prepping this episode, we kind of laughed because you know, you and I are usually kind of opposite and, you know, we think about different things. We think about things differently. So usually if one of us is one way, the other can offer the opposite viewpoint. And in this case, I think we both somehow escaped the real freak out about diet, food, nutrition, and feeding for the most part. And I don't know why that is, but I think it's still worth talking about today because I think we're the exception.
Yeah, I agree, Sarah. I don't think this is something either you or I have ever freaked out about. And the irony there is I think both of our families eat pretty healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So it almost feels like sometimes there can be this unintended consequence to freaking out about certain things where they become such a thing, like such a big thing that then you almost like the freaking out almost is counterproductive.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
People rebel against it or you end up rebelling against your own freak out. Like, I think that that can happen. And I think the fact that you and I are both very aware of nutrition, but like pretty relaxed about how it plays out in our own family has actually been good. So I will make one small caveat. And I think this is also a nice way to frame sometimes what can look like freaking out, but isn't. Yeah. And nutrition, specifically breastfeeding and like baby nutrition, mm-hmm. were both things that I got really into but I never worried about. I just think I really enjoyed learning about things like that when my kids were really little and mm-hmm. I like food. I'm a food oriented person. I was fascinated by the physiology of breastfeeding and how mm-hmm. breast milk changes. And like, I remember finding that fascinating and reading so much about it and reading a lot about, you know, how, trends in infant nutrition changed, like all the different kind of theories around delaying solids and allergens and all that stuff. And the funny part is I never was really worried about it. I just really liked reading about it. So sometimes I think, you know, we all have our thing. And if your thing means you want to delve really deeply into something and just be really like academically scholarly about it, that doesn't have to translate to freaking out. Like you can still find ways to know a lot and use your knowledge and not let it kind of mess with your mental health around it. And also to give other people a pass and some room to not be as into the thing as you're into. And, you know, we've talked about this before that I think that there is a direct relationship between how much anxiety you have about something yourself and how apt you can be to judge other people about it. Mm-hmm. It's that whole, we judge people when we feel guilty and we feel guilty when we feel insecure and mm-hmm. That's just a spiral, right? And so I think it's totally okay to reframe if there's something you're just super into and whatever that thing is, maybe it's sleep or discipline, for that just to be your thing mm-hmm. and you just love it and you want to learn all that you can about it, but you don't have to take it the extra step to freaking out.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be fear-based of I'm getting super into this so that I prevent XYZ in the future, right? It can be purely, like you said, almost an enjoyable deep dive into an area of child rearing that you find genuinely interesting. I never thought about it that way until we were about to record this episode. We were talking and I realized that toddler discipline and young, you know, kind of positive discipline fundamentals was exactly the same for me. I wasn't worried about tantrums. I wasn't worried about messing up my kids with my discipline style. It never came from a place of freaking out. It truly came from a place of interest and I'm going to learn as much as I can about this. And then I was kind of done. I kind of read a bunch and listened to a bunch. And I still love, you know, if someone comes to me for advice about toddler preschool behavior, discipline, different kind of behavioral stuff, I still love that in the same way that you probably could still get fired up talking about breastfeeding. But that also did not come from a place of freaking out for me. So I really love that reframe. And I really love kind of the invitation you gave that if you're feeling freaked out about something, to see if it's possible to reframe it as a learning opportunity. And like, what would happen if I just learned more about this? Kids and friendships that we just talked about. What would happen if I picked up this book and read it? Not so that I can prevent the friendship apocalypse that, you know, I'm sure is going to happen in third grade, but just so that I'm a little bit more educated. And I love that. So I guess the feeding and nutrition is number one. We're validating that if you are, you know, just obsessed with trying to get your kids to eat more vegetables or worried or concerned about their nutrition, I'm just validating that that's a really, really common one, number one. Number two, for some reason, we both got a free pass on that one and neither of us fixated on it. But certainly we know what it's like to fixate on other things. So we empathize with you. And three, if there's something you're feeling like that about, I love that just to reframe as an opportunity to learn with like a detached learning kind of rather than so attached to the outcome.
There's a saying I heard not too long ago, and I don't mess this up. I believe it was, if you can name it, you can tame it.
Yeah.
And it was about anxieties. Mm-hmm. And sometimes if we have this broad based thing, like I'm freaking out about food or feeding my baby, or I'm freaking out about sleep, or I'm freaking out about whatever discipline, we don't always know exactly what it is we're freaking out about. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes more information, not less, can be helpful, because if we know that actually what we're worried about is if my baby doesn't get 5 different servings of fruits and vegetables per day that, you know, completely represent the rainbow, that they're going to have, you know, their spine isn't going to grow right. Like that's like mm-hmm. a specific thing. Like the more specific you can get sometimes on those things, the more you can then find the piece of knowledge that can help you deal with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
I totally agree. Well, let's take another break and then we've got some more opportunities to freak out after that.
All right. Sarah, you know, I spent about 45 months of my life pregnant, right? That is not a joke. Do the math. And I remember being so bummed out at parties and events because everybody else would be sipping these delicious looking adult drinks. And I was left with basically water or soda. And I don't even really like soda that much. It's not that I wanted to get a buzz while I was pregnant, but I wanted that feeling of having something special in my glass that tasted grown up.
I know. And even though my last pregnancies were a little later than yours, there still weren't a lot of options for good alcohol-free adult drinks.
Yeah, I tried an alcohol-free wine once when I was pregnant, and it basically tasted like the sparkling grape juice that you give kids on New Year's Eve. And no thanks.
Well, our pregnant listeners, or anyone who can't or doesn't want to drink alcohol but still wants a tasty grown-up beverage, are going to love hearing about our sponsor, Groovy. Groovy, that's G-R-U-V-I, is a line of alcohol-free craft beverages, including 4 varieties of beer and a Prosecco that tastes really close to the real thing.
Yeah, I've really been enjoying trying the Prosecco in a variety of ways. Like, you know, those wine cocktails that are all the rage right now that come in cans and are really kind of expensive.
Yeah.
I've been making my own versions of those to bring to the beach, and they taste great and they're alcohol free. So I can get home in the afternoon and still have energy to like do yoga or clean up the house.
You know, this could be a great option for if you still want to drink some alcohol, but just want to drink less of it. Groovy could totally be part of your strategy for spacing out drinks and still having something delicious and different to sip during an all day pool party. In the beer line, they have an IPA, a stout, a lager, and a sour. So there really is something for every kind of beer lover, as well as the Prosecco.
That is a great idea. And Groovy beverages are all a lot lower in calories than traditional beer and wine, too, which is nice for those all-day drinking situations. So if you want to give Groovy a try, they've got a great deal for our listeners. Just use the code MOMHOUR for 15% off your order. Go to getgroovy.com. Again, that's G-R-U-V-I. And use the code MOMHOUR for 15% off your order.
You know, Megan, I'm looking at summer a little differently this year, and I'm really trying to find ways to keep my kids curious and interested in learning, but I also want to mix things up from what we did with distance learning, you know, before school ended. Our sponsor, Little Passports, is a box full of toys and games delivered right to your door every month, and each package contains exciting hands-on learning. There are subscription options for different ages and interests, starting all the way down at age 3, everything from science to U.S. geography to world travel.
Yeah, you know, Sarah, even when the weather is warm and things are slowly starting to open back up again, I just remember those times in the summer when my kids were younger and it was too hot or thunderstormy to play outside, and it felt like we had exhausted all the other ideas for fun activities. Busting out a Little Passports box sounds like such a great way to be a total hero on those malaise days.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. Hide that box away and use it when you need it. The award-winning Little Passports subscriptions start at just $12.95 per month. And just for our listeners, they're offering 15% off the price of any subscription. Use the offer code THEMOMHOUR at checkout for 15% off your order, and your kids could be flying rockets or looking through a microscope before you know it. That's THEMOMHOUR at littlepassports.com. And be sure to fill out the little survey to let them know you heard about Little Passports on our show. All right, we're going to dive into a couple more things we shouldn't have freaked out about. But this is actually one that I kind of do still freak out about sometimes. And I'm very curious to hear your take on this, Megan, because I'm guessing it's one that you didn't fixate on it as much. And I'll explain it this way. I often put a lot of mental energy into worrying about my kids being exposed to information they're not ready for or being scared by something when I'm not there to prime them or to be there to explain it. Like, it's hard to explain, but it's almost like if I'm not there to prep them for watching a scary movie or hearing about something that happened on the news, or even just to be the one to explain a tricky concept that, you know, they haven't encountered yet as they grow up, it's like I feel like I'm not parenting. Does that make sense? Like, it's like a need to be there to explain all the hard things in life. And it often, when they were little, manifested usually in a simple way, like seeing a show or a movie. Now with tweens, you know, seeing more mature content that's got jokes about all kinds of things and like, oh, okay, now do I have to explain that? Do we just let that one go? And it really hasn't gone away. But I just realize it's about this perceived ability to control what goes into their little brains, and probably a fear of like, if they're exposed to something too soon or if something really scares them, then what happens? Then blah, blah, blah. That's where we get into like, maybe I need to name it better to tame it. But I'm guessing maybe you didn't have that experience, or maybe you do in a different way.
Not anything like what you just described.
Yeah.
But I think that there was definitely, this was a worry for me when my kids were little. I think for me, it has changed. I think when they were small, I really didn't want them exposed to stuff that I felt would be like character, like problematic to character development.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked about backsassing and, you know, all of those like violence. I didn't want them to see people being mean to each other. Like things like that really were big on my mind when they were little. But then I was never really worried about them, you know, hearing like swear words and stuff like that. There was just always things that I did think about and didn't. And by the time the small kids came around, like the younger kids came around, I relaxed a ton because it becomes so much harder to control. And I also saw that the big boys often were doing that work that you're describing. Like if they were all watching a show together that was a little above the younger kids' heads, I could see how the big kids were contextualizing it for them and how they did a really good job at it a lot of times. So Clara now watches some different anime shows with the older boys, and they're a little heavy for her, but like I'll watch them pause it and explain something to her. And I'm talking like Jake and Isaac, like the adult kids. And they all talk about it together, and it's like become part of their sibling culture. So, and they did that when they all watched The Office together, which definitely had some stuff. They all, besides Clara, watched Arrested Development together, which has got way like some risque stuff in it. But I can see how they're not just watching it in a vacuum, and there's a lot of learning going on about a lot of different things.
Yeah.
So I'm okay with it. I do have at least one story about every one of my kids that I'm just going to share quickly
because
it kind of takes you through the trajectory.
Yeah.
So when Jacob and Isaac were really little, like they really had for a long time, just like 10 VHS tapes.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, and then with PBS, we had like PBS, we had, I think we had like one VHS tape of SpongeBob, and that's about as racy as it got. And then we had like Mary Poppins and I don't know, Blue's Clues, a CD of or a DVD of Blue's Clues. We had like just stuff like totally safe.
Kid programming.
Really kid appropriate stuff. And they had a babysitter that allowed them to watch Blade.
Oh, gosh.
Which is awful. Like, I don't even remember much about that movie, except I think it's about like a vampire that drives a motorcycle,
gosh.
And it's like super duper violent. And they came home. They were 2 and 4, 3 and 5, maybe, and told me about it. And I freaked out on the babysitter and in general. And I remember thinking, like, I remember having this feeling like waiting for the Blade effects to take, you know, like to really like kind of take place. Like, when is the Blade going to take them over? When are they going to become violent? When are they going to start like, you know, throwing toads off the top of balconies and things? And that never happened. Although they do sometimes still say, hey, remember when that babysitter let us watch Blade? That was really messed up. And the fact that it stands out that much in their minds, I actually kind of feel good about, because it was such an anomaly. Like, I remember them coming home with their eyes wide, like, Mom, she let us watch a movie called Blade. And I was like, what?
And they remember your reaction too, as much as they remember any of the movie.
You're right. Like, I don't know that either one of them could name anything about it now, but I definitely reacted. Okay. So then William, by the time William was in his middle years, like middle elementary, so 7, 8, 9, I had started to relax a lot. But he had a little friend who was the oldest in his family. So like at 8 years old, he was the oldest. And so his mom was just in a different stage from me. And I remember her calling me and saying, I have something to share with you, to tell you. I'm really embarrassed about this. I feel really bad. And I'm like, oh my gosh, what happened? Yeah. And she said she had come into the basement where the boys were playing on the computer. And she had found out that William and his friend had Googled sexy ladies.
Oh.
Which I thought was so funny because only an 8-year-old is trying to get to like illicit content by Googling sexy ladies.
And, I mean, who probably doesn't, I mean, has no idea the illicit content that they're actually trying to get. They've just heard that something.
Exactly.
You're not
He's just like,
to.
I mean, I heard this, I think there's this thing called like, you know, sexy and there's ladies and I guess they're sexy. And so the mom was freaking out and I thought it was so funny. And I think they got like a bra ad or something because she had some kind of blocker on the... So it's not even like, it didn't even turn anything up.
Right.
But I thought the fact that they Googled that was about the most adorable thing and she was mortified. So it just kind of shows you like how, where you are in the parenting realm or in this, you know, what phase you're in or how far along you are as a mom can change that. Then I had to really kind of restock when Owen was between 6 and 11, because he was so afraid of things. Like he couldn't watch the Thriller video when he was like 10 years old. He would have nightmares. Like there were things that wouldn't have set any of the other kids off. It all set Owen off and he had trouble sleeping. And so I felt like there were times when I had to tell Owen, you know, everybody wants to watch this show, but this show is not going to work for you. Mm-hmm. And so you can't watch it. And I felt bad doing that because I had never like, you know, restricted one of my kids who's close in age to another from watching the same darn thing the other one's watching. But I just knew he couldn't handle it. And I think over time, he resisted a little bit at first, but over time he realized I was right. Mm-hmm. And he was kind of grateful for me to just kind of figure out ways for the older boys to watch stuff where he was already in bed or I was doing something different with him. And then we've got Clara. And, you know, like I've shared, Clara's an anxious little kid. She's got fears. I am always surprised by what scares her and what doesn't, or what creates anxiety and what doesn't. It's not scary scenes. She's not afraid. Like I was worried that she was going to be really worried, say, about the coronavirus. Nope, not worried about it. On the other hand, if she watches a show where someone does something embarrassing or where they lie.
I remember you
saying
this.
Yes. If they lie and are trying to get away with a lie, she gets like a stomach ache and can't handle it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like, so all those like family sitcoms where people get themselves.
Like cringing, the cringe factor.
Yeah. They get themselves in a pickle because they do something dumb and then they don't. She'll be sitting there talking to the TV going, why don't they just tell the truth? Like, they're just making it worse. Why are they making it worse? And I can see her getting herself all whipped up. So sometimes I'm like, is this a way for her to learn?
Mm-hmm.
Or is this like creating unnecessary stress? And I don't know the answer.
Yeah.
But I just like sharing all those because I feel like she was also like that when she was very small.
Mm-hmm.
So the things that would have an effect on her were not always the same things you would expect.
Yeah.
And just like with the other kids.
Well, what I'm taking away from this as you talk is I think I've always approached this like I can't let the toothpaste out of the tube. I can't let the little monster pop out, like the Jack in the Box pop up, because fill in the blank bad thing will happen. And that's, you know, I'm not really sure what I thought. When in fact, like often expecting that these things are going to happen, and just like your friend, putting reasonable safety parameters in place on your internet, on your Netflix, you know, but then understanding that they will encounter, it's impossible to control that they won't encounter news stories or media or adult humor, or, you know, that they are meant to encounter those things and that maybe they're opportunities for discussion. That's kind of what I took away from all your stories.
Yeah.
So I like that. And it's so simple when they're tiny, I guess is the other thing I want to say. It's so simple because you literally can be practically screen free like I was, and you can have 5 VHS tapes like you did. And it's very simple. And the older they get, the harder. I mean, I'll use veiled language here, but even things like holiday magic. You know, they go off to first, second, third grade and different people's holiday traditions and magical things that happen around Christmas time. You can't control that narrative either. Like, it's not just about scary movies. It's about they are entering the world that you can't, there's no like parental controls on that.
Right. So, and they do need to learn to navigate that. Right. They need to learn to navigate disappointment and fear and anxiety and all those things.
I kind of totally forgot about the whole Christmas thing, because that's another thing I put a lot of energy thinking into, is how to talk about the magic, how to explain it, what to say if they ask questions, whether there should be, you know, a small elf involved or not. Like, and it actually comes back to this same thing of like trying to control the narrative, which gets harder and harder. So I loved your stories there.
Okay.
Well, another big one is just developmental milestones in general. And moms love to freak out about kids meeting or exceeding or being behind developmentally. And I guess what I'll say on this one, and just share maybe the way that I tend to freak out about this kind of stuff, is, of course, we know there's really good reasons for keeping track of milestones. And I think when we, maybe in our pandemic episode, when we talked about the purpose of public health guidelines, like the really important role that they serve in kind of standardizing expectations, can get problematic when you get down to the personal level.
Yes.
And I think there's a lot of overlap here. So we know it's good to track milestones. We know it's good for, in general, kids to keep pace with their expected development. And we know that early intervention in a lot of cases is good. So we know all of that. I think where I struggled and still struggle sometimes is, it's like I try to be more of a scientist or a data person than I really am. And I hear things like, I'll just use like an extreme example. Like, if my baby doesn't learn to feed themselves with their own hands, that could be a sign of future sensory processing issues. And kids with sensory issues are often prone to tantrums and outbursts. And now if my baby doesn't eat this Cheerio today, he's going to get kicked out of kindergarten and spend the rest of his life in therapy. Like, that's where I have a hard time taking the recommendations and the whatever data point I've seen and not extrapolating. And so what has helped me, and really truly helped me, like this is really a practice that I try to stay on top of with myself, is I have to focus on the child in front of me, their actual challenge or milestone. And are they actually delayed, or am I anticipating some kind of delay? If they actually are, if they actually have a skill that they need to work on, then guess what? We can work on that skill for this child right now. Nothing else really is relevant. I have to be that kind of sort of boundaried about it with myself, because we are not, I mean, even those of us who are educated and like to read up on stuff, we are not physicians, we're not data scientists, and it's really easy to Google stuff or to know just enough to be dangerous, but we don't understand like causation and correlation and really what these studies are saying. Like, we really don't. And I think of myself as a smart, educated person, but I know that I don't really know that. So I have
to focus. Well, it's not your job.
Yeah.
It's not your, And what I thought was interesting about that is like, what those to me say is that if you went backward, if you said, okay, this child has been diagnosed with a sensory issue, they may then work backward and say, one of the things kids with sensory issues had in common that we can use to help diagnose it is that they didn't like to feed themselves.
Yeah.
What's one of many, right? One of many things. But the fact that your baby doesn't like to feed themselves isn't necessarily going to, it's like when, you know, A is always, you know, B or B is not always A. Yes. I can't, you know what I'm
like,
talking about.
Like
though, right?
All rectangles. No, all squares are rectangles, but not all rectangles. But not are
all
squares.
Rectangles are squares. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. So it's like, it's one causal thing or causing and I'm not even going to get into causing and correlating because I don't have time right now, but like one thing that is part of the milieu that makes a child with this diagnosis is just one thing. And it's not a diagnosis.
Correct.
Yep.
I've had to work on that. And it really does help. So if it helps anyone else, I focus on the child in front of me and the particular issue they are having or not having. End of story. If I need to seek an expert counsel on that, then that is what I look into for that child and that issue. And that's it.
Yeah. Okay. So developmental, it's funny. I didn't really freak out about developmental milestones and when they were really little. And partly that's just because all my kids did things pretty typically. Like they all walked reasonably early. They all talked fine, like reasonably early. And I did a lot of looking around at friends and going, yeah, they seem to be kind of on track. I guess we're good. I definitely paid more attention when it was Jacob because he was my first and I had time to read and stuff. But I don't remember freaking out about it. I did some of that hindsight embarrassment related freaking out when I realized later that I had missed something. Mm. And I remember particularly with Jacob's speech, it was, you know, adorable when he was little, but it just didn't fix up as quickly as it probably should have when he got into school. And when I finally kind of realized how rough it was compared to the other second graders in his classroom, and I think his teacher had to tell me, you know, like he really could use some special classroom help. And then I was like, oh, huh. And then I listened to him talk around other kids his age. And I think this is very common. His vocal patterns, he was my kid. I was around him talking all day long and mm-hmm. had been, he was my first. And so his vocal patterns were literally the basis of our family's language development. Yeah. Like his mispronunciations are part of our canon. Yeah. We still talk like baby Jakey in our family. And I love that, but it made me miss some things.
Yeah.
But then I kind of went into the shame spiral over it. And the funny thing is now, I think he had like a year of like really minor in-class help where he got pulled out, like, I don't know, for 15 minutes a day. And he came out of it fine. So it was like I freaked out for not freaking out, and maybe neither of the freakouts would ever have needed to happen.
Correct.
It was like,
yes,
once I knew it was time to act, I acted, and it ended up fine in the end.
That is so important, because I think that therein is one of the opposites of us. And I'm always trying to somehow prevent that experience of wishing I'd done something sooner. So I'm like, right. I'm like scrambling like the duck feet underwater, trying to solve for this hypothetical future so that I don't look back and wish I would have noticed something. I don't know if that's an Enneagram one thing. I don't want to miss something and wish I,
yeah.
But for you, like you had all those years of not worrying at all about his speech, which is actually like a wonderful gift. And then by the time you realized it, you had a little freak out and then moved on. So it's like, yes, neither freak out it was truly necessary. But what are you going to do?
The early freak out and the later freak out could both have been avoided, but it's hard sometimes.
Right.
Like it's when you feel like you've screwed up, it's really hard not to. Yeah.
Yeah.
Really not hard not to feel that.
Yeah.
But it did turn out fine.
Agreed. Okay. Well, it's almost time to wrap up. But as we were planning this, a big thing that has come up both for us personally, but also that we hear from a lot of listeners about is moving schools, moving towns, moving out of state. We get a lot of very kind of sweet emails from listeners being like, I don't know if I should. Actually, I just answered one last week. So it's one of those things that I think is understandable to freak out about if you are faced with a move for your family. And then there's all these other things we've talked about, like changing friendships and, you know, all these like other mini freakouts that fall under moving. So we thought it would be fun to do an episode about moving. It's something we've talked about before, but it's been a couple years. So next week we will kind of tackle that, not just from the angle of things we shouldn't have freaked out about, but also maybe some tips and strategies we've learned in our various moves. And who knows, you may not have a move on the horizon, but you may down the line. So I think that'll be fun for next week.
Yeah, agreed. I'm looking forward to that one. Lots to say. Well, thank you so much for listening, everybody. Hey, I want to call out the people who have sent such nice emails and commented related to the episode I did a week and a half ago with my niece, Cecily, and my nephew, Mario, where we talked about Black Lives Matter and racism as a family. It was a great conversation, and we really didn't know what to expect when we published something like that. It's not like our usual content. Yeah. And the responses have just been wonderful, and I mean, exactly what we would expect. We should always expect from this community because you guys are great. So thank you so much for that.
Yes, I agree. You all are exactly what we knew you were, which is amazing and supportive. And we just are so proud of this community. And speaking of that, a great extension of this listening community is our Facebook group. So I will just throw a link in the show notes, and you can also probably just find it in a Facebook search. It's the Mom Hour Listener Community on Facebook, and we would love to see you there. And we will be back in your ear soon with another brand new episode, and we'll talk to you then.